Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers.
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in.
We live.
We live and direct.
Look at Clark Kent over here.
Do you know what I'm...
In his Negro form.
So for those of you who can't see, right? Actually, this is something that I'm trying to get. I don't know. 3D glasses, guys. Yeah. The ones from the cinema that you normally pay for every time you go, because you either leave the one that you bought at home or you dispose of it somehow. I found a couple in my drawer and I was like, yo, these could pass as sunglasses. Could you tell these were 3D glasses?
No, I would never have known.
I thought you can't see it, but like it says laptop specific trying to anti-glare material.
Yeah.
Who knows, man?
For me, I was like, look at this blade looking ass,
yeah,
bitch saving Marvel's ass when they were almost bankrupt ass.
I'm trying to show you the bit where you can see that.
They walking
that
ass.
Real 3D. Oh, this background's not having it. But yeah, you get the gist.
You're better than me, mate, because I just stopped caring. Like, I didn't like 3D. Yeah. So I'd just go into those movies and I just wouldn't even wear the glasses. I was like, I don't care.
It used to hururt my eyes, I'll be honest. I think now, though, I think there was one thing I went to, 4DX.
Sorry, please pause. Wouldn't you just pay for the 2D version of the movie rather than pay for the same?
This is the thing, right? Yo, my friends would be like, oh, 3D is so good, man. It's so good. Let's go watch it in 3D. I'm like, 3D kind of sucks. I don't feel it. Nah, we got to watch this movie in 3D. Then we'll go watch the movie in 3D. Nothing would actually happen.
Yeah,
like,
true.
And it was like, I'm glad we spent that extra money, buddy.
It's mad gimmicky. Very gimmicky.
I will say this. The whole 4D experience was pretty amazing for me. The one where they splash water on you.
Yeah, the 4DX. 4DX,
yeah. That was
amazing. That's the sound good.
They've got a lot of stuff now. Sorry, Oz, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying I haven't done it. So...
You need to do it.
It looks super cool.
You need to do it. I think I watched the latest Spider-Man in 4DX.
I
think I watched it because you said AJ, and it was so sick.
I asked my 10-year-old, guys, we're still jumping the gun. We ain't even introduced the homie yet. The honorary sage.
Let's take it back.
So, who are you, man?
Hey, my name's Levi. I'm one of like AJ's friends. From way back in school.
Yeah.
And I got invited onto the podcast. Yeah. You could count them. You could count them at that point. Yeah. So I got invited onto the podcast. You know, I do a bit of a lot of everything, you know. I'm a fencer. I do film. I do like voiceover stuff. I do little bits of everything. So...
Fencer, like you back garden fencing or?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Wow. We go out there, like, we put up in the fence posts, you know, you got to drive them in. Like,
these are the kinds of skills I think we need to pass down to the next generation, because we just don't.
Don't
I don't know how to fence.
Nah. Yeah, it's sword fighting. So I decided I'd learn some of that because I was bored one day and thought, why not? No one really does this. This is probably just like a rare thing, bit of a dying art. Let's just see what I can do for a bit of fun. And here I am, 7 years later. Yeah, it's addictive. It's addictive.
Still building them fences. That's sick, man. That's dope. Actually, the only time I've ever done, I think the only time I've ever done fencing is on Mario and Sonic Olympic Games on the Wii.
Oh,
that's my only experience.
Because fencing is not accessible. That's not
Oh,
where do
man.
You even find that?
Yeah, like, I have a question. Almost, like, what was the origin? Okay, we've got broad strokes that you were bored, but what on earth, did you see something on the Olympics? Or, like, what happened for you to be like, yo, this is actually the path to go down?
So I'm just a real nerd, geeky guy. Like AJ can definitely tell you that. So I was on YouTube and I was just watching like history stuff and people, because you know, everybody goes through a stage where they're like, I'm like a samurai. I love like the katanas. I love all that stuff. So I was looking at history stuff and seeing like about swords, and then I looked into like European swords, and people were like, oh, actually the rapier is actually really good because it's like really long and you can use it with one hand, blah blah blah. So I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool, you know what, no one really do that, that would be cool. Because in my head, here I am, I'm like, yeah, when all my mates show up and they all come with katanas, I'm gonna come with a rapier, you get me, I'm gonna be different, you see that, like, yeah, because you know all them sword fights that go down all the time. So I was like, yeah, that would be a bit of fun, you know, I'm gonna look for that. So I look for like some HEMA groups, and they're all in London. So I was like, or at the time anyway, they were all in London. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to do that. Maybe I'll do fencing because it's basically the same thing. But you know, I was like, I'll do it for like a couple of weeks or something, a month. So, then yeah, went down. It's over at Moulton College, if you guys know where that is, and. Yo, it was just real fun. And here I am, just 7 years later, still doing it, still training. It's nice. There's a lot of stuff to learn.
HEMA?
Yeah, HEMA. That's a
Historic European Martial Arts.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Okay.
I've been looking for some HEMA clubs myself, actually.
Oh, for real?
And I will say this, you are somewhat of an inspiration to me.
Oh, really?
100%, 100%. And this is one thing I wanted to like speak to you about. Was there, because for those who don't know, Levi is a beautiful black
ebony.
Ebony. Stallion. yeah, my bad, I'll get off your
Nubian.
So the reason why I bring the color up is because you don't see black fencers. That's not something that's so commonly thought of.
Mm. Yes.
So when I saw you with pictures on Facebook in your gear with your sword, I'm like, oh shit, this guy. And I have a love for swords just as much as you, and I have a love for martial arts. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking into it. And I had asked you questions, actually. I reached out to you. I was like, yo, where did you go fencing?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was doing, like, mad research around it. And so definitely you are an inspiration for me. And I have been looking for HEMA clubs. And it has branched out more outside of London now. Because there's places
okay,
in Birmingham.
Nice.
There's places around the country. So at some point, I would like to get into the Birmingham one. Where
Yeah. Mate, that would be wicked. Like, I would love to see you doing that, bro. We need more black people doing it. It's 100% a thing. Like, there is another black guy who is fencing as well, and he is sick. He's so good. You know, I'm sure you've all experienced this before. There's been a time where, you know, it's just you. You're like the only black guy kind of on the scene, so you kind of get a bit used to that. And then you see another black guy, and there's that awkward thing. We're like, are we now in competition? Is this what it's going to be? Oh, no. And we both fenced the same weapon as well. So there was like a bit of a rivalry. Because there's three weapons in fencing. There's the foil, which is like a very thin square blade. Very light. And it has like a metal jacket that you wear. And you can only be hit on the jacket. There is the saber, which is like a slashing weapon. One-handed still, but you have like a longer jacket, covers the sleeves as well. And then you have the épée, which is a triangular blade. It's like the foil, use all the same moves, but you can hit anywhere at any time. There are no priority rules, so it's more fun because it's more like a real fight. And we both were fencing Epee at the time, and yeah, it was a case. It was like, oh no, we both won at the same time. Now we've got to fence each other. Luckily, I had the advantage because I had just a bit more experience, so I was winning those. But now he's moved on and he's doing Sabre, and he's so good. He's wicked. His name's Deco. He now fences for Jamaica, like 100%. Like, yeah, he's on the Jamaican team, like legit. So yeah, he's sick.
Jamaican Olympic team member. Sick.
Yeah, man. Don't worry, I've been whipped by a Jamaican team member as well. This one girl, her name is Caitlin Chang. She stomps me. I was like, yeah, this would be cool, like fencing an Olympian. I hit her once, and then she was like, "Oh, you're gonna hit me, Levi?" Yeah, man, she whipped me. I was like, "I can't even hit this girl." Yeah,
Joe, you know, that's a sentence that can only work in this context.
If we're looking to, me and AJ had not with fencing, of course, but we had a situation where we went into this bar with another one of AJ's friends, and it was a rock bar. We only went there for a couple of drinks, but we stand at the bar, we ordering our drinks, and then this random black guy comes from like the other side of the room, and he goes, "A black man!" he notices me, and then he looks over to AJ and goes, "Two black guys! Wow!
Where were you? Where were you?
No, you live in London, which is in a very diverse part of London.
Mm.
So it's easy for you to be like, no, there's loads. No, for us, we're still rare breeds out here.
Yeah, oh
the
man.
The context as well, we're in this rock bar and people
got Look, I've had it happen as well before where I remember I was out with some guy and he was like, "Levi, you're fucking this up for me." I was like, what do you mean? He's like, "Nah, there's too much competition now, man. You're like stealing all my game."
do you know, on my side, this is an experience I've had through traveling throughout the country and throughout the world.
Mm.
Whenever I see another black person, I give them nothing but love with the whole, yo.
Yes. The head nod. Nod. Yes. Head nod.
Yes. My observations were, if the black person was of immediate African descent, then they would give me the nod. But if the person was of immediate Caribbean descent, I wouldn't get it back so much.
They would be
a bit more standoffish.
Really? Okay. Okay. So
that was my initial observation. But as I've gotten older, I'm a lot less standoffish in general. So it's a case of, well, I don't care. I'm still going to give you all the love.
Yes. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's what I love about you, man. Like, that's such a thing. Like, I'm kind of similar as well in that. But it's weird. Maybe it's because I'm like a Caribbean descendant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that's why I was surprised, because I was going to say, I find this a little bit the opposite way around. Like, if I see Caribbean people or maybe like native British born, like I'll give them a nod and they'll give me the nod back. But sometimes I'll see some African guys and I'll be like, yes. And then they're just carrying on about their business. Like, I'm like, okay, all right. No worries, no worries.
That's really interesting. And it could be the perspective we both have coming from the, you know, I'm African descent, you're Caribbean descent.
Mm.
So that's super interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Diaspora, man, like
a lot of people don't know this, but there is a bit of a clash between Caribbeans and Africans.
Yeah. Well, you know what that is, mate.
Well, I've heard.
That's just some white supremacy right there, man. That's what that is.
Well, I've also heard that there's this element of, you sold us. You sold us.
Yeah. So
we don't totally feel cool with you guys. There's been no bridges built.
Uh-huh. And because I remember I grew up in the Caribbean community, and because there's two fold, right? there's the, they sold us. This is where the white supremacy comes in, right? Because that's the narrative that we're told. By who? So, yeah, we internalize that. And then there's maybe a little bit of another thing, which is sometimes members from, like, the original culture or, like, the main body of the culture don't really understand diaspora a little bit. Because when we in the diaspora, like, because I've had this criticism from some Africans before where they've said, it's like you guys don't know yourselves. Like, well, yeah, we don't, because we've been cut off, right? So we've had to make our own, like, culture, make our own connections. So, but, like, for me, not at all. Like, I remember being young and, like, my cousins would be saying stuff, and I was always like, this is kind of weird. Why are we, like, they're like, oh, yeah, man, you dark like an African. And I'm like, yo, what kind of this is this? Because really, like, we're still kind of cussing ourselves because we're still dark. You get me? Like, I don't feel this. And now, like, I'm a bit older, wiser now. I'm like, yeah, I don't mess with that, man.
The thing is, and I don't know if my brothers had a similar experience, but there is an element in the African community through, you know, my personal experience of the Caribbeans being an other.
Okay.
In the sense of, exactly as you said, they don't know themselves. There's an element for us where the criticism is you act white. There's a lot of the culture that comes across as white. And, you know, I'm older and wiser. It's like, yeah, because they developed a culture around white people. And that's not like a diss or anything, but the culture was built around Europeans.
It comes in like one of the things you see sometimes, like, because I was like, oh, what Caribbean culture is there? What stuff is there in, like, our roots? And then a lot of it, like, some stuff, quadrilles. Like, but what are quadrilles? Like, because that's like a Caribbean dance, right, that they do on different islands. Each of the islands have their own dances. Really cool. But the dances are the dances that the slaves took from the masters. They watched their masters dancing and were like, cool, we're going to dance their dances, except we're just going to, like, mock them. So that we'll do over-exaggerated versions of their dances. So they're like exaggerated European dances. And I was like, whoa. He's like, but this is like a big thing in, like, Caribbean culture, right? Like, I was like, oh, of course. Because, like, they've come in and they've been cut off from their original, like, culture. So they've had to build something new.
100%. Yeah, yeah. 100%. And it took me a while to realize that, and I'm fortunate that I was able to grow up in the diaspora, because I'm able to see a lot of things that a native African or a native Caribbean can't see. Because it's just the stories you hear.
Really. Yeah, it's ironic, actually. I don't know. Have you read Akala's book, Natives?
No.
That's cool.
I'm a fan of Akala, and I do own some of his work, but that one in particular, I have not.
No, that's cool. It's a good book. I can't say I've read, like, all of Akala's other stuff. That's the one book I have read from him. And in that book, he talks about a similar thing, because over here, now Caribbean people will look at British Caribbeans, and it's the same thing as, like, with like the Africans, is we're like, hey, you guys don't know yourself, right? Because we're kind of cut off from the culture. But, like, Akala also was like, yeah, it's interesting, because people who grew up in the diaspora, as they get older, there's a yearning to reach back and get that stuff, so they start putting on, like, the Patois accent and building up, like, these connections, wearing daishikis and stuff like that, stuff that they don't have a connection to, but they want to feel that connection, whereas people in the Caribbean don't have that. So he was laughing because he was like, oh yeah, this is when everyone over here is trying to listen to like reggae and hear the new reggae tunes, and you go to like the Caribbean and in Jamaica, like, what are they listening to? Celine Dion. Because they don't have the feet who like they're trying to reach and connect with Jamaican culture, yeah. Right?
It's, like, so, it's the exact same on the African front, because myself trying to reconnect from where I come from because I grew up somewhere else, yes. I wear dashikis now, man.
Yes.
What do you do that?
Nice.
That's interesting. Where would you draw the line in terms of appropriation? We're talking about this British born cut off from their roots. This is both, say, Jamaican, African, it doesn't matter, regardless. Where do you draw the line of appropriation? Or is it because, oh, my ancestors wore it, so I'm damn near, I have a right to wear whatever that I want to wear.
So maybe I'll get cancelled for this. I don't know.
You're not allowed to be at this training session no more. We heard what you said.
This is like, get out of here. Cancelled podcast.
Yeah. No, like, the thing I feel, and it's specific to black cultures, because the way blackness is, it's, you know, it's a reductive category, right? Like, you're no longer like Zimbabwean, you're black. You're no longer from Kenya, you're black. Like, you know, we lost all these different connections to be forced into black. I feel a little bit that the cultural appropriation to other black cultures specifically, I don't really have a much of a problem with. So if you're like a Caribbean guy and then you're like, no, I want to get into like dashikis and other stuff, I'm like, okay, because you're still black. And we've all had that kind of oppression and separation. So you can make those connections without it being really disrespectful. Like maybe if you're maybe a black guy and you really want to like start, I don't know, wearing kimonos all the time and doing that, maybe you can make the arguments for like it's a bit cultural appropriation-y. I don't know if there's that same element, because you need that level of disrespect and trying to take from the culture without honoring it, which I don't know if black people have the social power really, or capital, maybe in like some instances, but I think I don't mind so much. I don't have like a beef with people who want to reach out and connect with other black cultures.
On the flip
cultures.
Side of that, let's expand it from blackness and just black cultures. The British guy who decides to eat Spanish paella and host
a tapas night
or a Mexican night, and he wears the sombrero and he's got a fake mustache on.
Wears extremely loads of fake tan.
Yeah. Now, where do you draw the line?
Is that singing my salsa? Hey, yeah, 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 yeah. Look at my salsa.
Is that far removed from our experience, because we have a focal point of black culture and blackness?
Sorry, carry on.
No, do your thing. I'm curious.
I feel that in that instance, it really depends. What's that guy's connection to those things? Like, does he have Spanish family? Does he have Spanish roots? If he doesn't...
He just likes that shit.
If he just likes it, I'm still kind of okay if he wants to do that. Maybe don't wear the sombrero and mustache. That's a bit corny. Like, don't do that. But, like, yeah, like, you can do that. You can honor other people's cultures, right? But when it starts being... like, hey, yeah, we're doing a Mexican night. Everyone come around. We're going to wear sombreros, wear your fake mustache. We're going to call each other gringo all night and drink tequila. I'm like, yeah, now you're just putting on a costume and it's becoming disrespectful.
Yeah, you're doing too much. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But what about, like, universities, you go out partying, they'll have these themed nights.
Oh, yeah.
Now is that so immoral? Or would that depend on the context of the each individual's own personal take from that?
See, everything is separate, right? Like, I don't necessarily get offended. Like, I can have conversations with my friends and we talk about Django Unchained, and we can just we can have like with white friends and be like, yeah, so like the use of like the N-word in there, and if they want to say it or if they're just talking about it and they're saying it in that context, it doesn't actually offend me. Now, does that mean that they can say that around other people? Absolutely not. I ain't backing them. I ain't gonna be like, oh no, it's all right. I gave them a pass to say. You get me? Nah. I ain't getting crucified for you, mate.
Levi like, told me it was okay.
You know what I mean? Like, if they say that, I'm like, you ain't with me. I ain't know this guy. Say it. Not at all. Nope. So, There can be plenty of people out there who
Levi
find...
brought the mustaches and the sombrero hats.
There's probably plenty of people who are fine with like a Mexican dress up night on a night out or whatever who are Mexican. But you know, personally with me, I'm a bit like, nah, that makes me uncomfortable. I'm not going to do that. Mm. Like, I don't know if I've done it in the past. Maybe I have. Like, I don't remember all of the uni nights. But, yeah, am I doing it now? I don't think so.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture. Each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
I would just like to give my two cents on this, because it's in some ways completely different from what you guys may believe.
Mm. All right.
I think...
I hate blacks, Mexicans, Chinese people. The dirty south. my guy, that's just 2 cents. Hot take.
I kind of fall under the scope of your freedom of speech is an internal right, and you should fight for that, because there are many places where people can't say what they want to say. Even if I don't like what you have to say, I think it's okay that you can... I think you have the right to say it. And I kind of prefer that you say it or act it or do it so I know what I'm dealing with. Levi, you seen Naruto?
You know what? I watch up to Rock Lee's fight and then I'm like, that's the end of the series, mate. Let's fight. Sure. Like,
100%. You might as well just tap out at that point.
Unanimous.
So there's this villain, the main villain in the series is a guy whose master plan is to use this ninja magic to cast everyone into a coma state where they have a dream which he can control, and it's the perfect dream for everyone.
Okay, yeah.
It's called the Moon Reader Plan. What was it? The Eternal Tsukuyomi or something like that. That doesn't matter. The point is, everyone gets to live their best life in this comatose state in their dreams. That's what it seems like to me when we start saying, oh, people shouldn't do that and shouldn't do this. It's like, I get it. But all that really does, because people are still going to do it, realistically. They're still going to, and even myself, listen, when you describe the sombrero night with the mustache and the hat and everything, and drinking tequila and calling people gringo and stuff like that, that sounded like a fucking whale of a time for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was kind of like, I want to be at that party.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's not that I have the right, but it's the case of, I'm going to die one day. And I'm not saying I want to live a life that's trying to offend people, but I want to live a life where I don't limit myself. It's not because someone feels uncomfortable by me doing something that I should stop it.
I fully hear you. I think it brings it back to the point that I was making, like, where do you draw that line of it being negative appropriation, because like, I believe I think
a dude should be able to wear blackface. A white guy should be able to wear blackface. I 100% think that. But I also 100% think if he gets his ass kicked, well, motherfucker, you're wearing blackface. What do you think? There's going to be repercussions. Do what you want, but there will be repercussions.
Mm. Yeah. So, see, this is the thing where maybe I didn't make myself clear. Because, like what I was saying when I was saying I'll talk with my white friends about, like, Django Unchained or whatever. That's basically counts. Like, if I had, like, a Mexican friend and he's cool with me saying all that stuff. Yeah, man. Like, I mean, like, there's some sombreros going on. The mustache is getting on. Like, I'm wearing that poncho. You get me? Like, we're going to have a whale of a time. But that's because we have that rapport. You get me? Yes. So we're going to do it in our space. And we're going to do whatever, say whatever we want to each other, blah, blah, blah. Now, when we start going out into public and doing that, sure, maybe I can make those jokes around, blah, blah, blah. We can do that. But, like, if I went into an all-Mexican area, which would be hard because I don't think we've got those in the UK. If I was in an all-Mexican area with all these other people, and then I started trying to joke with them like that, and then other Mexican people got mad at me, like you were saying, there's going to be consequences. Yeah. And I don't feel I should be able to just say, nah, he gave me a pass.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's such a crap cop-out.
So, I think you should be able to say that, but in the real world, that shit ain't going to wash.
But that's the thing, though, like, because that's like you saying that you think it's okay for that white guy to get his ass beat for wearing blackface, but at the same time, you're kind of saying, no, that shouldn't happen.
Do you know, I kind of disagree with your point, AJ. I get what you're saying. But me personally, I think, like you're saying, Levi, the context really is what defines where that line is. So as you're saying, you know, where do you draw that line? I think context is everything, right? Mm. And I hear you, you know, maybe you want to be at that party and wear sombreros and do, but what about your party where they're wearing do-rags? Yeah.
And they've all got blackface.
They're rolling marijuana. And they're so, why don't you go to celebrate party? I think that's the narrative that's opposite.
It's someone, because it's what the individual is comfortable with. I'm not saying I don't get uncomfortable. Of course I do. But because I'm uncomfortable doesn't mean a person doesn't have a right to exercise their thoughts. Even if their thoughts are completely silly, completely heinous.
You're really trying to get cancelled.
Yeah. This is the cancel show, man. This is going down. None of us are getting out of this alive.
Oh God.
We're spitballing episode names.
Last. Well, the thing for me is, I just think about it like, I don't try to beef with people because I always think to myself, like, you ever had like one of your friends kicking off about one of their siblings, and they're just like, that guy's a dickhead, I can't stand him, rare. I don't jump in on that. I'm never like, yeah, your brother's a dick, mate, he's a prick, get rid of him, blah blah blah, because they're still family. So there's going to come a point where they connect or whatever, and then all that stuff you said is just out there, and it's like, why were you saying all this shit about my brother?
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I don't know who I'm going to be friends with next. So why would I want to be disparaging, disrespectful, or anything like that to other cultures? Even if I don't have a friend who is in that community, because I don't know when I'm going to meet somebody who is going to become my friend. And like, I meet like an Asian guy. And if I've been making like Chinese jokes and saying, oh yeah, chinky this, chinky that, and then I meet him like an Asian guy, I'm going to feel like an arsehole.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I don't know, because
like technically, if he hears that, he might be like, "Leave it. That really hurt my feelings." And then I'll be like, "Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, but you know, I was just having fun."
Is it fun just to
be disparaging like that?
So, I don't think it is fun to just take the piss out of someone. But the thought that comes to my mind is, the people who tend to have a similar or a disposition that they can tolerate each other tend to attract each other. And there are some people who... So I have friends of Asian descent who are, in some cases, absolutely hilarious. But if you hear some of the stuff they say, it's offensive to where they come from. It's offensive to where they are. It's offensive to everyone. It's a bit like, man. But it's not coming from a place of hatred. And that's where the context lies for me. It's like, where is this coming from? And even if it is coming from a place of hate, exercise that in the world, because then it can be challenged. We can get really good, decent people who say to you that, actually, that's completely silly. And if you look at this, but if it's a case of, oh, this person can't even voice out this, it's like, you can't even say what your symptoms are, because there's an underlying problem. But the world is pushing for people to be in a place where you can't even say what the symptoms are. And the symptoms will be whatever, let's say, bigotry that someone spits. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't know, because at the moment, like, obviously, this is a kind of hyperbolic example, but it is all real because it's still happening. But, like, if you look in America, it's not the bigotry that people are pushing back on. Like, the books that they're banning are critical race theory. Like, they're banning Martin Luther King. They're banning, like, just accurate history on, like, George Washington owning slaves. That's the stuff that's getting banned. They don't want people to be able to talk about that. They don't. It's not any of the stuff like, oh yeah, Mexicans are rapists. That's not getting banned. Like, any of that stuff, they don't care. They're letting that stuff slide. So I get where you're coming from, but I think at the moment, realistically, that's the stuff that's getting a pass already. Like, it's only now that it's starting to be challenged. And, you know, I think That's been the privileged speech at the moment, of being like disparaging or being able to say that kind of stuff. And, you know, when privileges are taken away, it can feel like oppression, right? But it don't mean you're actually being oppressed. You're just coming down to the level of everyone else.
I guess, as I've kind of always seen myself as the outsider, I feel like just living in the Western world in 2020 is a privilege. The rights that we enjoy are, in, you know, you're all completely aware, just not shared equally across the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think those people are going to be like that and do their heinous acts anyway. I rather it's out in the open so we can deal with it, rather than they're pushed underground where they can then build alliances and just get even wackier and spiral out of control.
But if they're building, it's out in the open, it also builds out in the open.
Oh, but
and they don't have any. There's no pushback. So as you can see,
but it's twofold. So they should be allowed to do it. But I also said they should get beat the fuck up. Right? It's twofold. It's both. I think as humans, we all have a duty to act in the world. Where you see good or evil, you face it and you tackle it. And I understand some people don't have that disposition to be able to do that. But I think that's something everyone should aim for, to be able to stand up against injustice. Because there's always going to be injustice.
Guaranteed.
That's just humans. There's a philosopher, it was Jung, Carl Jung. He says,
okay,
I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially says the line between good and evil, it crosses countries, nations, civilizations, the individual, the heart. So that good and evil is always going to exist. And the only way you can tackle injustice and evil in the world is by facing it. So that's why it's a two-parter. We as humans all have a duty to each other to try and promote good, because, you know, my observations in the world is things tend to tilt towards being in a chaotic state. Like, It's just constant. You look at the news. I stopped watching the news because it's just so depressing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's mad.
So if we're all out there pushing to go against that type of stuff, so it's a two-parter. That's my view. And I know it's completely random and crazy, but that's where I sit with it.
I understand your view. I will say I disagree. Just because... And here comes another cancelling.
I was in the seat to get cancelled.
Yeah, no, I'm going for the big one.
So we're in competition now. There's competition now.
This black guy trying to get
cancelled. No, who's going to be the first black guy?
He's
talking
about all these things. You get me? Like, yeah. So when looking at like older works from like black scholars like W.E.B. Du Bois. He discusses things like whiteness as property. I don't know if you guys know, but like, obviously races don't exist. Black, Asian, all of it is made up. It's they're political categories for like categorizing people rather than actually describing biology. Because they came up before we discovered DNA. And one of the things that he was talking about with whiteness is that the thing is for like creating solidarity. So during slavery in the United States, black people were brought over as slaves. And I'm sure you've probably heard this said to you plenty of times. Irish people were also brought over as like indentured servants. So they were basically like enslaved, but they were enslaved for like 7 years. Then after that, they were let go and given lands and money and stuff like that. Or sometimes they were just brutally cheated out of their stuff. So what started happening, because the Irish were being exploited by the British at the time, they weren't really considered white. And they were sent over to America. And the Irish would be going, hey, man, like I'm getting treated like shit like you are. So they started to actually form connections and bonds with the slaves because they were like, yeah, I've got more in common with you than I do with like these English people or these Americans. So to stop this is where you start seeing the use of the term white. It became a separator to say to the Irish people, you aren't part of this group. Like you're not. You shouldn't hang out with those black people. You're white like us. That means you're just better. So, and this is where W.E.B. Du Bois talks about the wages of whiteness, where they're not really gaining anything, but like a kind of mental superiority. And what that does is starts to create like this hegemony, where they'll just hold the status quo and start creating like solidarity with each other. So where you're saying we should be challenging, when there are no legal systems in place to put limits or precautions on things like racial speech, what you'll find is when a white guy starts calling you like a nigger and shit, other white people won't really challenge as much. They'll feel more likely to just go with white solidarity because it's like a programmed response because we all get conditioned through our society. And as black people, I'm sure you guys have all felt it where you are in a situation, something kind of off happens, then you kind of don't want to be the black guy who has to bring up and lower the tone because you're like, oh yeah, that was kind of really fucked up what they just said, but like I don't want to be that guy. And that right there is the pressure that you're feeling from white solidarity. Even though you're a black person, you're feeling the pressure to conform even still. So in those instances, because there are no legal protections, what you'll find is a ramping up of the like negative racial aspects. As you can see, like when Donald Trump started using the Kung Flu and China virus, violence spiked against Asian people.
Mm-hmm. Massively across the world.
Yeah, like incredibly. And that's because white supremacy is global.
It knows no borders. There are no lines. There are no specific nations. It's just everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's in the air. I can smell it right now.
There's a person of Caribbean descent who went to, he was from one of the French Caribbean islands. And he ends up going to France, and he ends up going to Africa. Unfortunately, I've forgotten his name right now. It's not coming to me, which is incredibly frustrating, because he's someone who was a very prominent writer to me. Oh, it's such a shame. At some point, I'll message you and put it in the show notes as well, who this guy is. Because I would want his name to be spread, and it's just, it's late, I'm tired and whatnot. So, unfortunately, the name's not coming to me. But he goes on, one of the things that resonated with me is it was the concept of how people of black descent, where we are right now, we, and especially from independence, from that period of independence of, okay, the reality of the situation is you've now become free after being enslaved to, colonialized by whoever. You're now free. And at that point, you know, we had a choice of who are we? And of course, we didn't know who we were and all this, because we had just been slaves and oppressed for so long. But we then had a choice of, and we still do. And I think it's still being, the choice is still being made. And, you know, you see a lot of progress across the Caribbean, across Africa, across the world in developing countries. You see a lot of progress compared to where we come from. In fact, there's databases that show the general standard of living has increased across the world and continues to increase. Whereas some people never had toothbrushes before, you have people living in huts who have toothbrushes. So it really goes to the minute detail, and it illustrates that in general, things are on the up for humans. So, with the opportunity to choose who we become now, it was somewhat of a warning that this author gave. And it was the case, he goes, you see, we all think with this privilege and supremacy that the whites are on top. And I'm putting this in my own words, but it's essentially that they're the same as us who were dealt different conditions because they lived in Europe, which presented completely different conditions for the human species at the time. And if you follow the line of where they started from to where they are now, it's not that great. Global warming? That's not a guys living in a hut idea. That's a consequence of where we are in Western society. And it's not to speak bad of Western society, it's just to give an observation to say, yeah, since the Industrial Revolution, we've had a significant increase on the change of climate on our planet.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be that way. You can choose to be something else. There's lessons to learn there, for sure. But we don't have to be that way. And that's where it's a case of, like, for me, it's not, it's a privilege to be white in Europe or the Western world, because it's predominantly Europeans in Europe. And there is an element of when Europeans go around the world, there's a bit of, like, love shown to them more so than others because they are white. There is that as well.
Yeah.
But it's way more of a privilege for me being a black Sierra Leonean in Sierra Leone than it would be for someone who doesn't know anything about there and is, the first time they've gone there. And they have no connection to it or whatever. It's way more of a privilege. I speak the language. I know the lingo. I know the culture.
Yeah.
So it's a case of the privilege only exists in their land.
Well, privilege is an interesting concept, because privilege is often viewed as benefits. But I think when people discuss things like privilege and like talk about privilege theory, like white privilege, male privilege, etc., what it really more encapsulates is like a lack of a hindrance. So I'm going to use like America, because like most of like the writers that I've read are American. So a lot of my examples come from America. We can take in America after slavery into like, I think it was like the 60s. There was a thing called redlining, where what they would do is they would draw just straight up red lines on the map. This is where black people can live, and where in these areas white people, black people can't live. So in those instances, the white privilege isn't, oh yeah, like you're given all this money, you're given all these benefits, blah, blah, blah. It was a case that as a black person, even if you had the money, you couldn't live in certain areas. It was just denied to you. So that's the privilege that the white person has. And these privileges can be minor, but they can stack up. So when you look at like legal systems, like I don't know if you've read, I forget her name. Is it Michelle Alexander's New Jim Crow? She's a lawyer, and basically she just goes through decades worth of systematic compiling of like, this is how being black means that you get scrutinized more by the police. This is how it then causes to more arrests. Those more arrests mean that you're going to have to face more court cases. Those more court cases, you get like more prejudice from the judges, because the society sees black people as inherently criminal. So those punishments then become harsher. Those harsher punishments become longer sentences. Those longer sentences mean that now black people can't vote, etc. Now that they can't vote and are disenfranchised and can no longer be employed, they, when they come out, they are no longer able to help like look after themselves or do anything. So the only option is for them to commit more crimes. And like it's like this thing of like a small set of like series of compiling things, they stack up. And you can find that still even in other countries, like in Asian countries, where perhaps no, being white isn't like a quote unquote privilege. Like you're not, people aren't just throwing rose petals on your feet, but, there is still a preference, or you might see a white person and just assume, they have money. So people might just treat them a little better, potentially get the money. Whereas you might go somewhere like in Japan. I know some people, like one of my friends, he went to Japan and he's like, yeah, it was kind of awkward when, you know, you'd be walking down the street and then people would just cross the road. Because people, they see you inherently as criminal. They've been absorbing like American story. They watch like the MCU and all our like other stuff. So they've been absorbing those narratives about black people. But like any white people, maybe they're not like super beloved, but they're not necessarily getting like moved away on streets. They're not being shooed out of stores. They're not being followed around. So that privilege still kind of sits with them, even when it's not within their own country.
I mean, that's more to do, in my opinion, with their own internal conflict with... It's more to do with their own inferiority complexes. And it just so happens that Japanese, as an example, where white is great and black is not so great, you got to see that you get the, but it's older than just the media absorbed from the US. It's older than that.
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%.
You see it all over. You see it across India, where you see it in the black community, where you know, lighties and darkies.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's the holdovers from colonialism.
I think it's further than that. I think it goes way back, and it's somewhat innate to all humans, no matter what the society. There's discrimination within their own societies, and there's discrimination of the other. And I feel that's normal, because my understanding of what we are and how we developed, and you got to see that the span of time when we were hunter gatherers is one thing. Then we moved to the agricultural type of life, and now we're in this new industrial period. This new industrial period is tiny in terms of scale of human time.
It's like 300 years or so.
It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. So it's just like there's never been a time where we can be so connected as we are, but you still see certain things around the world, similar things, where there are a certain group of people who are discriminated against because of whatever characteristics. One common one is the color of one's skin, and potentially it could be through colonial times where the whites were seen as the masters. But it's been there for so long that I reckon it's older than that. It was there before that.
Yeah, so you are correct. There is a general trend towards whiteness. In like all different sorts of areas, where
the only type of people I know that want to try and get darker is white people. Everyone else is trying to get lighter. White guys will go for the tan, but everyone else is using something else to get lighter.
It's connected to where it was obviously in ancient times when people are farmers. Where if you're a farmer, you're out in the sun all day and you're working. And then if you're rich, you're inside. So being paler was seen as like signs of wealth. What was it? I believe it was like the Arab slave trade is where the term black actually originates from. And like all the Islamic slave trade is where it all like started and became like a political classification there. And then later on, chattel slavery from European settlements like came in afterwards, but they built upon that, and that's where they added that scientific racism, which is what is most prevalent and most impactful today. Those other forms did exist, you are correct in that, but where it starts becoming a lot more vitriolic is after colonialism, because like you're saying, though that industrialization period has been like revolutionary and it's been like one of the biggest changes to our society, but unfortunately to start the industrial revolution and to start capitalism, they needed free labor, because it's labor that creates wealth and value, not anything else. So slavery was what started capitalism.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art.
At least up here you have a fighting chance.
As long as we're alive, we got a chance. We got to find a flaw in this plan. There's nobody else can do this job because they got too much feeling.
Look, just go about your business like it was any other Saturday afternoon. Read your papers.
Lamb.
I don't want any more shooting around here.
Missy, radio. Would you look at that? Another black brother dying from the dying trap. I don't even rap. But I had to say a couple things on the track. I'm sitting back. Cosmopolitan society is getting mad. Instead of showing love, we're showing each other the gap. But I'm just here to spread love. I'm just showing now you can hear me rap. DJ, so I have to scratch. Number 9 on the knife, wear it on my back. Getting hard to breathe, too smoky on the track.
throw my fist up in the air because I'm black. See Everly Young, your body in the zone. Lion Mountain, I touch the clouds, sitting on my throne. Spiritual healings, really, I had to let them know. Lamps,
with calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own. Which path do you follow? Until next time.